Welcome, Curious Minds, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into an industry that might seem, well, a bit quiet on the surface, freight transportation.
Yeah, trucks on the highway, boxes moving, seems straightforward.
But trust me, beneath that calm exterior, a seismic shift just happened. Picture this. One of the giants in the sector, Yellow Corporation, vanished pretty much overnight back in 2023.
Right, leaving this gaping massive void in the market.
Exactly. So what happens next, right? Do the remaining competitors just cautiously step in, pick up the pieces, or does one company make a really daring, like, all-in bet on the future?
And it's precisely that daring bet that brings us to Saia Inc. Today, we're not just talking about moving goods from A to B.
No.
We're talking about a company, ticker SAIA, that's at a critical inflection point. They're in the less-than-truckload, or LTL, freight services sector.
Right, LTL. We'll unpack that.
Yeah, and their strategy now is, well, it's aggressive, it's debt-funded, and it's deeply, deeply centered on capitalizing on Yellow's sudden bankruptcy.
Okay, so that's our focus, and our mission for you today is to really unpack the core investment thesis around Saia. Is this high-growth, high-risk strategy? I mean, it's heavily reliant on Yellow's collapse, right?
Absolutely.
Is it a brilliant long-term play that's going to transform the company? Or is it, you know, a gamble fraught with execution challenges where the substantial near-term margin compression they're experiencing, could that ultimately outweigh the promised benefit?
Yeah, the benefits of that bigger, denser national network they're building.
Exactly. So think of this as your shortcut to understanding a complex, high-stakes business transformation in an industry that, I mean, it literally keeps our economy moving.
That's right. We're going to dive deep into Saia's operations, explore the fascinating dynamics of the LTL industry as a whole. It's got its own unique structure. Then we'll assess Saia's unique competitive position within it. We'll dissect their financial performance, especially in light of this bold strategy. And finally, critically evaluate the risks, but also the opportunities that lie ahead for them.
Okay, let's unpack this. I mean, lots of us see trucks on the road, but maybe don't fully grasp the mechanics of freight. So let's start right at the foundation. What exactly is less than truckload freight? And what role does Saia play?
Okay, LTL freight. It's fascinating because it addresses a very specific and, I would argue, pretty essential niche in logistics. Unlike a full truckload, right, where an entire semi-trailer is dedicated to one shipper's goods.
Right, like a truck full of iPhones going to one warehouse.
Exactly, one factory to one distribution center. LTL is all about consolidation. Think of it like a big puzzle. It means taking smaller shipments, typically weighing anywhere from, say, 150 pounds up to maybe 15,000 pounds,
okay,
many different shippers, and cleverly consolidating them all onto a single truck that's heading in a similar direction.
Ah, okay, so grouping things together.
Precisely. This makes it an incredibly economical and flexible option for businesses.
Yep.
Especially those that don't have enough product to fill an entire truck by themselves, but still need efficient, reliable transport for their smaller, maybe more frequent orders.
So if you're a mid-sized manufacturer sending, I don't know, a few pallets to a dozen different retail locations, LTL is your go-to.
That's the sweet spot.
And for Saia, this isn't just like one service line among many. It's the beating heart of their business, isn't it?
Absolutely. LTL is Saia's core. It consistently generates well over 97% of its total revenue. It's what they are, fundamentally.
Wow, 97%.
Yeah. Now, while their focus is squarely on LTL, they do offer some complementary value-added services that kind of round out their offering for customers.
Like what?
These include things like non-asset truckload brokerage, which basically means they can arrange full truckload shipments for customers without actually owning those particular trucks themselves. They sort of act as a middleman.
Gotcha. So they can handle bigger loads too, just differently.
Right. They also provide expedited transport for time-sensitive freights, think, you know, urgent parts for a manufacturing line that's down.
Okay, critical stuff.
Yeah. And broader logistics services that can help customers manage more of their supply chain. This comprehensive suite, it helps them serve their customers more holistically, which is, frankly, crucial for building those sticky long-term relationships in a really competitive market.
That sounds smart. Be a full service provider without needing to own every single asset for every possible need. But how does Saia actually get paid for all this? Is it just a standard price list or is it more tailored?
It's definitely more sophisticated than just a simple price list. Saia primarily operates through two main revenue channels. About 75%, three quarters of their revenue comes from customer-specific negotiations.
Okay, so tailored pricing for big customers.
Exactly. This means they're sitting down with individual businesses,
yeah,
Tailoring prices based on factors like the sheer volume of freight the customer ships. The specific characteristics of that freight, is it fragile? Does it need refrigeration? Is it hazardous materials? Mm-hmm. And also the unique service requirements, like needing specific delivery windows or extra handling. This indicates a very sophisticated approach to managing their larger, more consistent relationships. And frankly, optimizing profitability for those specific clients.
That's a huge portion of their business to be customized like that. So they're not just relying on some generic rate card for most of their income. Mm. What about the other quarter, the remaining 25%?
Right. The remaining 25% of revenue is subject to what's called a general rate increase, or GRI. These are periodic, sort of across-the-board price adjustments they apply to their standard tariff rates, the more general customer base.
Okay, like an annual price hike for standard services?
Pretty much. And what's particularly telling about Saia's market position, and maybe their confidence in it, is that they implemented a particularly aggressive 7.9% GRI in late 2024 for this segment.
Wow, 7.9%, that's punchy.
It is a bold move, yeah. It signals they feel they have strong pricing power and that their service offers significant value that justifies such an increase, even in that broader market segment.
A nearly 8% hike on a quarter of their business that certainly implies they feel strong. Which brings us to their operational blueprint, the hub and spoke network. We hear this term a lot in logistics airlines too. But what exactly does it mean for LTL, and why is it so significant that it creates these high barriers to entry?
The hub and spoke network is literally the physical architecture of LTL. And it's the core reason why it's such a capital intensive industry. Think of it like this. You have smaller spoke terminals scattered across local areas. These are like your neighborhood post offices, but for freight.
Okay, local collection points.
Right. These terminals are where local freight is collected from various shippers or where it's delivered to its final destination within that local area. Once collected, that local freight is then transported, usually in smaller trucks, to larger central hub facilities.
The hubs.
Yeah.
The big sorting centers.
Exactly. At these hubs, all those individual shipments from multiple spokes are sorted, consolidated, and then loaded onto bigger line haul trucks. These are the trucks that transport the freight across much longer distances, often running between different hubs across the country. It's like a grand sorting station, optimizing the long haul.
So it's all about maximizing efficiency for those longer distances. Instead of sending a half-empty truck directly from, I don't know, a small town in Ohio to a small town in California.
Right, which would be incredibly inefficient.
You funnel it through a central point, like maybe a hub in Chicago, fill a big truck going west, and then break it down again at another hub closer to the final destination, maybe in Los Angeles.
Precisely. This model is incredibly efficient once it's established. Mm. But, and this is the key point, building and maintaining it requires truly immense capital investment.
In what specifically?
In real estate, you need land, massive warehouses, cross-dock facilities where freight moves quickly from one truck to another. Then there's equipment, like forklifts, complex sorting machinery, and underlying all of it, sophisticated technology to track everything.
Sounds hugely expensive.
It is. And it's also operationally complex to manage all those moving pieces, track millions of packages, coordinate thousands of trucks, and ensure timely deliveries across such a vast network. This complexity, combined with the sheer scale of investment needed, creates formidable barriers to entry.
Right. It's incredibly difficult for new competitors to just appear and challenge established players like Saia. The cost and the logistical know-how needed to replicate such a network are just astronomical.
You can't just start an LTL company in your garage.
Definitely not. And this brings us to where Saia gets really interesting lately. Just a few years ago, relatively recently, Saia was known more as a strong multi-regional carrier. They had, 148 terminals in 34 states?
That's right. A solid player, but not fully national.
But the sources indicate they've undergone this dramatic transformation. What's the scale of this shift? How much have they grown into being a truly national player?
The shift has been nothing short of dramatic, yeah. By mid-2025, Saia had aggressively expanded to over 200 terminals, and crucially, now covering 46 states.
Wow, from 34 to 46 states and over 50 new terminals in just a few years.
Exactly. This isn't just incremental growth, it's a strategic leap. It has firmly established them as a true national carrier with active coverage across all 48 contiguous states. It's a massive, rapid expansion that completely redefines their market presence and their reach.
That really is a huge land grab in a very concentrated period. What's the strategic thinking behind this? Why transform from a strong regional player to a full national footprint so quickly? What's the goal?
The primary goal is really twofold. One, to significantly increase network density, and two, to enhance customer proximity.
Okay, unpack those terms. Network density.
A denser network, meaning more terminals closer together, translates directly to more efficient routing. Their trucks simply don't have to travel as far empty or deviate as much to collect or deliver freight.
Makes sense. Lower costs, faster pickups.
Right. It also means fewer touches per shipment. Less handling means less risk of damage, lower operational costs. And crucially, for the customer, it translates to faster transit times.
And customer proximity, getting closer.
Yeah, literally being closer to where the freight originates and terminates. Imagine being able to get your goods to more places across the entire country faster and with less risk of damage. That's a powerful selling proposition.
And we have a really powerful statistic to illustrate that density improvement, don't we?
We do. By 2025, the source notes that 61% of all U.S. zip codes were within 50 miles of a SIA facility.
61%. How does that compare to before?
That's up significantly from just 35% back in 2017.
Wow. So they've nearly doubled their close proximity reach into local markets in less than a decade.
It's a tremendous improvement, yeah. That represents a huge improvement in market coverage and presumably much faster service potential for a much larger pool of customers.
That directly supports their goals of better proximity and efficiency. It means they can offer better service to a much wider array of potential clients, or maybe more comprehensive, speedier service to their existing ones, which you'd think should ultimately drive both volume and revenue growth as these new terminals mature.
That's the plan. That's the investment thesis in action.
So with all this expansion and service capability, who are these customers? Who relies on SIA's services? Are we talking about just a few massive clients, or is it a broad mix?
Having a diversified customer base is absolutely crucial for revenue stability in an industry like freight, which, let's face it, is inherently cyclical.
Right. It ebbs and flows with the economy.
Exactly. It also mitigates what we call concentration risk, where too much of your revenue depends on just one or two big clients. If one leaves or hits a downturn, you're in trouble.
So SIA manages this risk.
They clearly prioritize it. They intentionally manage their portfolio so that no single customer accounts for more than 5% of its total sales. This diversification acts as a strategic buffer, protecting them from downturns in any single industry sector or, you know, unexpected issues with an individual client.
That sounds like very intelligent risk management. And it's not just small businesses using them, right? The sources mentioned some pretty impressive blue chip names. Who are we talking about?
That's right. Their client roster includes major retailers like Walmart and Home Depot, technology leaders such as Dell, food and beverage giants like Starbucks, and industrial mainstays like Sherwin-Williams.
Oh, those are huge, sophisticated shippers.
They are. And this impressive list isn't just about name recognition. It really highlights SIA's capability to consistently meet the demanding service requirements of these sophisticated shippers across a very wide variety of industries. You know, from fast-moving consumer goods to heavy industrial components. It speaks volumes about their reputation for reliability and the quality of their service, which is paramount for these kinds of customers who can't afford disruptions.
That truly is a testament to their operational prowess and customer focus. Now, let's shift gears a bit and get into some numbers that might seem a little counterintuitive at first glance. If we look at SIA's operational metrics from the second quarter of 2025, there's this fascinating dichotomy. Their LTL shipments actually decreased by 2.8% year over year. On its face, that sounds like softness in demand, right? Fewer shipments being made.
On its own, yes. A decrease in shipment count would typically signal a weakening market or maybe losing some small customers. But here's where the nuance comes in.
Okay.
At the same time, their LTL tonnage, the total weight of all shipments, actually increased by 1.1% year over year.
Huh. Fewer shipments, but more total weight. How does that work?
Exactly. It immediately prompts the question, how is that possible?
And the sources confirm this trend, right? With a 4.0% year-over-year increase in the average weight per shipment.
Precisely. The average shipment got heavier.
So how do we unpack this? What does this tell us about what SIA is doing, or maybe what the market is doing more broadly?
Okay, this tells us a few important things. The decrease in the number of shipments does align with broader commentary about that freight recession that characterized much of 2023 and into 2024.
Right, the slowdown we mentioned.
Yeah. During periods like that, businesses often consolidate their orders. They try to ship less frequently to save on logistics costs. So you naturally see fewer individual transactions.
Okay, that explains the shipment drop. but the tonnage increase.
But the increase in total tonnage, and crucially that increase in the average weight per shipment, strongly suggests that Saia is actively managing its freight mix. They're not just passively taking whatever comes their way.
What does managing the mix mean here?
It means they might be strategically targeting heavier, perhaps more industrial or bulkier, freight. Maybe freight that helps build density in key lanes within their newly expanded network. Or it could simply be that their existing customers are shipping larger individual orders, less often. It's about optimizing what they put on their trucks for profitability and efficiency, not just chasing every single small shipment regardless of value.
That's a really important distinction. It's not just passively accepting freight. It's a proactive strategy to optimize their loads, especially in those new lanes they're trying to fill.
Exactly. You want profitable density.
So how do pricing dynamics factor into this when you're carrying heavier shipments? We saw that revenue per hundredweight or yield decreased by 2.1% or 1.2% excluding fuel surcharges. Why isn't that necessarily a bad sign in this context?
This is a direct mathematical consequence of that mix shift towards heavier freight. Think about it like buying in bulk at Costco or Sam's Club, right? The unit price, or in this case, the price per pound or per hundredweight, typically goes down when you buy more or ship heavier individual items. So a decrease in yield per hundredweight isn't inherently negative if you're carrying more heavier freight overall. The total value of each shipment might actually be increasing.
And that's exactly what the sources confirm. Revenue per shipment actually increased by 1.8% and by a stronger 2.7% excluding those volatile fuel surcharges.
Precisely. So even though the price per pound might be lower because the goods are bulkier or heavier, they're getting more revenue per transaction per pickup and delivery stop.
Got it. So they maintained pricing discipline on a per shipment basis, despite that mix shift.
Exactly. It demonstrates a sophisticated approach to pricing in what was still a challenging environment. They're not just slashing prices to gain volume. They're optimizing the revenue for each customer interaction, ensuring each truckload contributes effectively to profitability.
Okay, that makes sense. Beyond the numbers, though, how critical is service excellence in an industry like LTL? Saia consistently reports a very low cargo claims ratio, 0.51%, and notes that approximately 60% of shipments are delivered within 48 hours. What does that signify in this market?
Oh, reliability is absolutely paramount in LTL. For businesses, their supply chain is quite literally their lifeline. Any damage to goods or any significant delay in deliveries can have cascading negative effects.
Like what?
Well, it can disrupt production lines if parts don't arrive, it can lead to lost sales if products aren't on shelves, and it can severely damage customer relationships for the shipper if their customers don't get their orders on time.
So a low claims ratio is a big deal.
A low cargo claims ratio, like Saia's being 51%, is a huge differentiator. It signals to shippers that their valuable freight is handled with extreme care and professionalism. It means less hassle, less cost, less risk for them.
And the speed, 60% within 48 hours.
And the high percentage of on-time deliveries within 48 hours speaks to their network efficiency and their ability to provide the consistent, dependable service that sophisticated shippers demand. It builds deep trust and fosters loyalty in a very competitive space where service failures can be costly.
Okay, that puts their operational performance in context. Now, moving beyond Saia's internal operations, let's zoom out to the broader LTL industry landscape. We've touched on how challenging it is to enter this market, but let's really nail down why these barriers to entry are so exceptionally high.
Right. It really comes back to that hub and spoke model we detailed earlier. The sheer immense capital investment required to build and sustain a national network of terminals, break bulk facilities, cross docks, and all the associated sorting and handling equipment. It's just staggering.
Billions of dollars, you said.
We're talking billions, yes.
Yeah.
Billions in real estate, technology, and a massive fleet of modern trucks and trailers. This physical infrastructure is so costly to build, and the operational expertise required to manage it effectively is so complex, that it creates exceptionally high barriers to entry. It essentially acts as a protective moat around incumbent operators like Saia. It makes it incredibly difficult for new competitors, even potentially agile, digital-only disruptors who might try to enter with just software, to seriously challenge them on a national scale.
So it's not just about having a good app or a smart algorithm. You need the actual physical infrastructure everywhere to compete effectively in LTL.
You need the buildings, the docks, the trucks, the people, the systems, all of it, nationwide.
And this industry structure has led to a long-term trend of consolidation, hasn't it? Which was then dramatically accelerated by Yellow Corporation's bankruptcy in August 2023.
That's probably the biggest understatement of the year in the freight world. Yellow was the third largest LTL carrier in the United States. Its sudden collapse removed approximately 8 to 10% of total domestic LTL capacity from the market overnight.
8 to 10%. Just gone.
Just gone. This wasn't just a hiccup or a minor market adjustment. It was, as the sources clearly state, a seismic event for the entire industry. It completely and permanently reshaped the competitive landscape. And it created an unprecedented opportunity for the remaining players.
That's a significant chunk of capacity vanishing instantly. What does this mean for the overall LTL market outlook going forward? Is it still robust despite these dramatic changes and the recent freight recession?
Yes, the outlook remains remarkably robust, actually. Even with those recent challenges, the LTL market is benefiting from powerful, long-term secular tailwinds.
Secular tailwinds? Like what?
Think about the relentless growth of e-commerce. That generally translates to more, smaller, and more frequent shipments, perfect for LTL, rather than huge single truckloads.
Right. More packages going to more places.
And exactly. Also, businesses are increasingly adopting just-in-time inventory models to reduce their holding costs, which again favors frequent LTL shipments. And there's a growing trend of nearshoring production, bringing supply chains closer to home, which often relies on domestic LTL networks.
So underlying demand drivers are strong.
Very strong. One forecast actually projects the LTL market to expand by over $110 billion between 2025 and 2029. That's a compound annual growth rate of about 6.8%.
Wow, $110 billion growth in just 4 years.
It signifies tremendous and sustained long-term potential for well-positioned players like Saia, who can capture a piece of that growth.
So you've got a structurally advantaged industry, consolidating high barriers to entry, strong underlying growth trends. That sounds like a very favorable setup for the incumbents.
It is, generally speaking.
Which leads us to this crucial element of capacity discipline and its impact on pricing power. The sources emphasize the remarkable capacity discipline shown by the remaining LTL carriers after Yellow disappeared. What does that mean, and why is this so key to preventing, say, destructive price wars?
It means that after Yellow exited the market, the remaining carriers, instead of rushing in blindly to fill every bit of that void, potentially slashing prices to aggressively grab market share, have been remarkably cautious and, frankly, rational.
They didn't just flood the market with new trucks.
No, they haven't flooded the market with excess capacity. Estimates suggest that only about 60% of Yellow's lost capacity is expected to be replaced by 2026.
Only 60%, so capacity remains tight.
Exactly. This disciplined approach is absolutely critical because it prevents oversupply, which is the primary driver of destructive price wars in pretty much any transportation sector. When capacity remains tight and supply is constrained, carriers don't have to compete purely on price.
They can compete on service instead.
Right. They can compete on service, maintain healthier margins, and be more selective about the type of freight they accept, focusing on profitability.
And this disciplined environment directly translates into that ability to implement consistent general rate increases, or GRIs, like we talked about with Saia's bold move. How did Saia's aggressive 7.9% GRI compare to its competitors in 2025?
Saia's 7.9% increase definitely stood out at the high end. For comparison, FedEx Freight announced a 5.9% increase that year, and both ABF Freight, part of ArcBest, and the leader, Old Dominion, implemented more modest 4.9% hikes.
So Saia was pushing the envelope there.
They were. This ability across the board, though, to consistently raise rates, especially for a significant portion of their business, really highlights the pricing power that LTL carriers possess within this disciplined market structure. It's such a stark contrast to the highly fragmented and often volatile full truckload FTL sector.
Why the difference with FTL?
Because in FTL, the barriers to entry are so much lower, you can basically start with one truck. So price competition is often fierce. LTL carriers, particularly the strong incumbents with these massive networks, just have a much firmer grip on their pricing power.
That really explains why the LTL sector is generally seen as more stable and often more profitable than other parts of the freight industry. Now let's look quickly at how the industry is adapting to regulatory changes. The National Motor Freight Traffic Association, the NMFTA, is implementing a comprehensive freight classification overhaul in mid-2025. What's changing fundamentally here?
Okay, this is a significant industry-wide update. It's been in the works for a while, and it fundamentally shifts how many products are classified for pricing purposes. It moves towards a system that more heavily emphasizes freight density.
Density, meaning how much space it takes up versus its weight.
Exactly. How much a shipment weighs relative to its volume, not just what the product is. This will impact over 40% of all products shipped via LTL.
Wow, nearly half. What are the implications?
The implications are pretty substantial. Both shippers and carriers will need to invest significantly in better data capture, meaning getting accurate dimensions and weight of every single package, which isn't always easy. And they'll need more sophisticated pricing systems to handle these new density-based calculations, ensure compliance, and optimize revenue.
So who stands to benefit most from this kind of complex change, and who might struggle?
Well, ultimately, it distinctly favors the larger, more technologically advanced carriers, like Saia.
Why then?
They have the financial resources to adapt their systems quickly. They can invest in the necessary technology for precise measurements, like volumetric scanners on their docks. And they can leverage density-based pricing to their advantage, perhaps pricing light, bulky items more appropriately.
And the smaller guys?
Smaller players, or those less invested in cutting-edge technology, might struggle to adapt efficiently. This could potentially lead to errors in pricing, revenue leakage if they undercharge, or even customer disputes if they can't accurately measure and price freight under the new rules. It's another way the industry structure kind of reinforces the strength of the leading incumbents who can afford the tech.
It sounds like another way for the strong to get stronger, widening that competitive moat we talked about.
It certainly seems that way.
This leads us back to the Yellow Corporation collapse. We've mentioned it multiple times, but let's really underscore why this was such a defining moment, a true game changer. Was it just a cyclical event, like any other recessionary trucking downturn we've seen before?
Absolutely not. The sources are very, very clear on this point. This was not just a cyclical blip. It was a permanent structural change that fundamentally strengthened the competitive landscape for all the remaining LTL carriers.
How so? Beyond just removing capacity.
Well, Yellow had this very long and a deeply entrenched history of being a chronic price discounter. They often seemed to sacrifice margin just to maintain market share or volume. And this aggressive pricing strategy had the effect of keeping prices down, or at least capped, across the entire industry for decades.
So they were the low price leader dragging everyone else down?
Often, yeah. Their exit immediately removed a significant and frankly often irrational competitor from the market dynamics.
So basically, with Yellow gone, it just raised the floor for everyone else's pricing across the industry. Less pressure to match those lowball rates.
Precisely. Their collapse created an immediate, sizable tailwind for the remaining players. Capacity tightened literally overnight, allowing carriers to command higher rates almost instantly. We saw reports of some shippers experiencing increases of up to 20% in the immediate aftermath as they scrambled desperately to find alternative capacity for their freight.
20%, that's huge.
It was a direct, measurable, and seemingly sustained boost to the industry's overall pricing power.
And it wasn't just about pricing power, was it? The collapse also presented this massive strategic asset opportunity for companies like Saia that were ready.
This is perhaps the most critical aspect, especially for Saia's current strategy. Yellow's liquidation, the selling off of its assets, provided a once-in-a-generation opportunity for well-capitalized carriers like Saia to acquire strategic terminal locations.
And Saia jumped on this.
They did. Saia, for example, successfully acquired 17 of Yellow's terminals through the bankruptcy auction for $235.7 million.
That's a lot of terminals in key spots, presumably.
Exactly. This allowed them to dramatically accelerate their network expansion plans, likely at a lower cost and certainly at a faster pace than if they had to find land and build brand new facilities from scratch in all those locations.
So it was a perfect storm in a way.
It was this unique confluence of events, the removal of a major price-disrupting competitor, and the sudden availability of strategic, well-located real estate assets. It has truly raised the floor for both pricing and profitability for the entire LTL industry, creating a much more favorable long-term operating environment for the survivors.
What a pivotal, almost perfectly timed moment for a company like Saia, already planning expansion to capitalize on.
Couldn't have timed it better if they tried.
That leads us directly into how Saia positions itself now in this reshaped competitive arena. How does Saia rank within the domestic LCL market today, and who are its main competitors?
Okay, so within that roughly $53 billion domestic LTL market, Saia is a significant top-tier player. They currently rank as the sixth largest by annual revenue.
Sixth largest. Okay, so who are the big five ahead of them, and who else is in their peer group? Who are they up against every single day?
Right. Their competitive landscape includes a few key, very well-known names. First, you absolutely have to talk about Old Dominion Freight Line, or ODFL.
ODFL. We've mentioned them as the benchmark.
They're widely considered the gold standard in the industry for operational excellence, for profitability, for service quality. They're known for premium service. They have a union-free workforce, which gives them flexibility, and they consistently achieve the best operating ratios in the business. They really set the bar high.
Okay, the leader. Who else?
Then there's XPO, Inc. They spun off some other businesses and are now a pure-play LTL carrier with a vast network and a really strong emphasis on using technology. You also have FedEx Freight, which obviously, as part of the global FedEx behemoth, leverages its broader network and huge brand recognition.
Sure.
ArcBest is another key player. They're more of an integrated logistics company, but their core LTL operation is their unionized ABF freight network, which has a long history. And finally, you've got TFI International. They're a diversified Canadian company, but they have a significant U.S. LTL presence through TForce Freight, which they actually acquired from UPS a few years back.
Right, I remember that deal. So Saia is definitely operating among some very strong, established, well-capitalized competitors, each with their own unique strengths and strategies.
It's a tough neighborhood, for sure.
So against these giants, especially Old Dominion, which you call the gold standard, what are Saia's specific competitive advantages? How do they really try to differentiate themselves in this market?
Well, their primary competitive advantage, which we've been emphasizing throughout, really is their expanding network scale and density.
The physical footprint.
Physical footprint, yeah.
Yeah.
The sheer capital required to build and operate a national terminal network acts as that tremendous barrier to entry for others. Saia's aggressive expansion strategy is a direct effort to widen this moat, as they say, make it even harder for smaller players, or even regional ones, to compete effectively on service quality and transit times across the whole country.
So they're essentially building out an infrastructure that they hope will be very difficult for others to match in terms of reach and speed.
That's the core idea. They're betting that scale and density wins in the long run.
So their network itself is a competitive weapon. What else helps them stand out?
Secondly, service quality is a core differentiator they consistently promote. Saia tries to cultivate this customer-first focus, aiming to provide a superior offering, but still at a competitive price point. It's not just marketing speak either.
How do we know?
It's backed up by those metrics we discussed. Their consistently low cargo claims ratio, that 0.51% figure, is really good, and their ongoing investments in improving on-time delivery and the overall customer experience. In an industry where reliability is just paramount, this focus builds very strong customer loyalty and hopefully gets them a repeat business, even if they aren't always the absolute cheapest.
Right. Service matters, especially for those big shippers. And finally, how are they leveraging technology to gain an edge beyond just the basic infrastructure for tracking packages?
Yeah. They're making significant technological investments in a few key areas.
Yeah.
One is to optimize their pricing strategies, using data to manage their freight mix more effectively, making sure they're taking on profitable business that aligns well with their network strengths, and not just filling trucks with low-margin stuff.
So smarter pricing using data.
Right. This includes leveraging data and analytics to enhance the overall customer experience, too, from the booking process right through to delivery tracking and communication. And as we touched on, they're even forward-looking in their fleet strategy.
Electric trucks.
Yeah, partnering with Tesla and Daimler to test electric semi-trucks. It positions them as a potential leader in sustainable freight solutions down the road. This tells you they're thinking not just about the immediate expansion, but about long-term leadership and adapting to future industry shifts, regulations, customer demands.
Very forward-thinking indeed. Now let's talk specifically about market share trends. Saia was certainly one of the most aggressive beneficiaries of Yellow's collapse, weren't they, in terms of grabbing volume?
Oh, they were indeed among the most aggressive and, importantly, the most immediate beneficiaries. When Yellow went under, shippers were desperately scrambling, calling everyone to find new capacity for their freight. Saia stepped up decisively.
How much did their volume jump?
They reported a dramatic 12.2% year-over-year tonnage increase in early 2025, right in the wake of Yellow's exit. They were uniquely prepared, partly due to their ongoing expansion, and ready to absorb a significant chunk of that displaced volume.
And they made that really proactive strategic move with the terminal acquisitions to permanently capture that share, rather than just temporarily accommodating it while others scrambled.
Exactly. That's a key point. Saia actively participated in Yellow's bankruptcy auctions, successfully acquiring those 17 terminals for $235.7 million, maybe more eventually. This was a very proactive strategy to instantly expand their operational reach in key markets they might not have been strong in and establish a physical footprint for long-term growth, locking in some of that share gain.
How did that contrast with, say, Old Dominion's approach?
It contrasts sharply. Old Dominion, for instance, took a much more cautious stance. They chose to rely primarily on their existing excess capacity within their already highly efficient network, rather than aggressively acquiring new assets from Yellow. They were more selective.
So two different philosophies.
Very different. Saia saw an opportunity for a permanent structural shift in the industry and seized it with both hands, making a big, bold bet. Old Dominion played it cooler, relying on their existing strengths.
That strategic divergence is truly at the heart of this deep dive, isn't it? Let's explore that further by benchmarking Saia against its peers, especially ODFL.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at profitability, Saia shows solid numbers, but as you've said, they lag significantly behind Old Dominion. Can you quantify that gap for us again?
Certainly. Saia shows solid profitability, let's be clear. An 8.96% net margin, a 12.42% return on equity recently, these are good numbers, definitely superior to some competitors like ArcBest, WT.
The ODFL comparison.
Old Dominion is just in a league of its own. They consistently deliver best-in-class profitability, often with net margins exceeding 20%. And their operating ratio, that crucial measure of how efficiently revenue is converted into profit, lower is better routinely runs in low to mid-70s.
And Saia's recent OR?
Saia's recent operating ratio was 87.8%. That starkly highlights the gap. It's a significant difference in operational efficiency and ultimate profitability. It's the gap Saia is explicitly trying to close with this expansion strategy, but it's a big gap right now.
That is a substantial gap in efficiency. But then when you look at how the market values these companies, it gets really interesting, almost contradictory.
Uh-huh.
Saia's price-to-earnings PE ratio is around 28x, which is actually comparable to Old Dominion's premium multiple of around 31x.
Wow.
But it's much, much higher than, say, ArcBest's 11x or TFI's 20x. What does this valuation disparity tell us about how the market views Saia right now?
It tells us that the market is essentially pricing in a successful execution of Saia's aggressive growth strategy. Despite its current profitability trailing Old Dominion significantly, the market is valuing Saia almost as if it will eventually close this profitability gap.
So the market believes the strategy will work.
It seems to be giving them the benefit of the doubt, valuing their future potential. It's acknowledging the temporary hit to margins as an investment that will pay off. It's a vote of confidence, essentially, in their long-term plan.
What about other valuation metrics, like enterprise value to EBITDA or EBITDA? The Saia is around 13x there, similar to XPO, but notably lower than Old Dominion's 20x. Is there a nuance there? Does that tell a slightly different story?
Yes, there's a nuance. The EBITDA metric factors in debt. And it shows that while Saia's PE might be approaching ODFL's, when you account for Saia's increased debt load used to fund its expansion, Old Dominion still commands a significantly higher valuation multiple because of its superior, established earnings power and cleaner balance sheet, essentially. On an enterprise basis, factoring in debt, ODFL's profitability is still seen as much more robust and reliable, deserving of that higher multiple.
And the price-to-sales ratio really highlights ODFL's profitability, right? ODFL's is exceptionally high at 6.2x versus Saia's 2.5x. That's a huge difference.
It is. Old Dominion's exceptionally high price-to-sales ratio is a direct reflection of its best-in-class margins. The market is willing to pay a much higher premium for each dollar of ODFL's revenue because it knows that revenue is incredibly profitable. A much larger chunk of it drops to the bottom line.
Whereas Saia's lower PS.
Saia's lower PS, despite its faster recent growth, reflects its current, explicitly accepted, lower operating margins during this heavy investment phase. The market isn't willing to pay as much for each dollar of Saia's revenue right now because less of it is currently profit.
So this really is the crux of the strategic dichotomy we wanted to explore, isn't it? Between Saia and ODFL and maybe the rest of the industry.
Absolutely. This comparison reveals a fundamental strategic divergence. Old Dominion is the undisputed leader in operational excellence, built meticulously on disciplined, consistent, highly profitable growth over many, many years. Their response to the Yellow collapse was patient, selective, relying on their existing strength.
And Saia.
Saia, conversely, viewed the Yellow bankruptcy as a true land grab, a once-in-a-generation opportunity to fundamentally alter its competitive standing, to vault itself into the top tier nationally very quickly, management consciously, deliberately took on debt, dramatically increased capital expenditures, and accepted lower near-term profitability to secure what they believe will be a larger, more defensible national network for the long run.
So for you, our listener, trying to understand this, an investment in Saia today is clearly a bet on an aggressive growth story. It's a belief that they will eventually close that margin gap with ODFL and realize the full potential of their vastly expanded network.
Right. Whereas an investment in Old Dominion is more a bet on continued steady execution from the established, highly profitable leader. Keep doing what they do best.
It's the central pillar of the investment thesis for Saia. High growth potential, but also higher execution risk.
Precisely. It's a classic high-risk, potentially high-reward scenario unfolding for Saia, sharply contrasting with the lower risk, highly consistent, but perhaps slower growth profile of Old Dominion. It's about two different philosophies for achieving success in a critical industry.
This leads us naturally into understanding the financial implications of this ambitious strategy in more detail. Let's delve into Saia's financial performance, what we're calling the price of ambition. To start, how has Saia's top-line revenue growth been performing recently?
Well, Saia has a very strong historical track record of consistent revenue growth. Over the last decade, they've achieved an impressive 10.4% compound annual growth rate in revenue, which is quite good.
10% a year for a decade solid. Has it accelerated lately?
And this growth has actually accelerated. More recently, yes, revenue increased by a robust 11.4% in fiscal year 2024. So the top line is clearly moving in the right direction, fueled by that expansion.
Okay, so the strategy is generating revenue growth. What have been the key drivers behind this acceleration? Is it just taking Yellow's business?
It's really a combination of factors. Solid market share gains, for sure, evidenced by an 11.5% increase in shipments during that period we looked at. And also their disciplined pricing actions, like that GRI.
Right.
While their underlying growth has been primarily organic, driven by reinvesting in and optimizing their existing network, over time, the opportunistic acquisition of those Yellow terminals was undeniably a critical catalyst for this recent acceleration. It gave them the physical footprint much faster to expand their organic reach and absorb significant displaced volume from Yellow's customers.
Okay, strong revenue growth, which is exactly what you'd want to see from a company executing this kind of expansion plan. But as we hinted multiple times, that growth has come at a cost, a significant cost to profitability. Let's get into their profitability trends and what's often described as the J-curve effect in action. That critical metric, the operating ratio, OR, has declined sharply. Can you explain that decline again?
Yes. This decline in the operating ratio, remember, lower is better here, is the direct and frankly intended consequence of their aggressive expansion. Saia's operating ratio deteriorated significantly. It went from a strong 84.0% in 2023 and an even better 83.2% in 2022 up to 87.8% in the second quarter of 2025.
From 84 to almost 88, that's a noticeable step backward in operational efficiency. Why? Is it just as simple as new terminals cost money before they're fully utilized and profitable?
That's precisely it in a nutshell. Management explicitly attributes this OR deterioration to the startup costs and initial operational inefficiencies of their many new facilities.
Mm-hmm.
These costs, rent, utilities, staffing, equipment depreciation, are incurred before those new terminals reach mature freight density levels and become fully efficient contributors.
So you have the costs immediately, but the revenue takes time to ramp up.
Exactly. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to staff, equip, and maintain a new terminal from day one. But it takes time to build up the volume of freight running through it consistently to a profitable level. So for a period, maybe months, maybe a year or two, these new facilities are inherently a drag on the company's overall profitability margin.
And this directly impacts their bottom line, obviously. Net income must be down.
It does, significantly. Operating income fell by a hefty 27.8% year over year in Q2 2025. And for the first 6 months of 2025, net income was $121.2 million. That's a sharp decline from $193.2 million in the prior year period.
Wow, profits cut by nearly 40% year over year in the first half.
Yeah. This reflects the full impact of those expansion costs hitting their profitability hard. It's truly the price of ambition, as this section's title suggests. It's a conscious trade-off management is making.
Building out a massive new national network clearly doesn't happen for free, and it shows starkly in the numbers. How have Saia's return metrics, things like return on equity, ROE, been affected by this strategic decision and lower profits?
Well, while they were historically strong, metrics like return on equity, ROE, return on assets, ROA, and return on invested capital, ROIC, are now definitely under pressure.
Why?
It's due to that combination we just discussed. declining profitability, and a rapidly expanding asset base. They're pouring so much capital into new facilities and equipment, denominator is growing, numerator is shrinking temporarily. It simply takes time for those massive investments to generate their full potential return.
What are the current numbers?
As of mid-2025, their ROE was around 12.7%, ROA at 7.8%, and ROIC at 9.4%. Now, these are still solid numbers in absolute terms for many industries, maybe, but they represent a notable decline from Saia's peak levels achieved just a year or two before. And crucially, they still lag Old Dominion significantly, which continues to set the benchmark for returns in the LTL space.
Okay. And this whole financial narrative truly culminates when we look at their cash flow generation, doesn't it? It paints a very clear, almost dramatic picture of their strategy in action.
It tells the whole story, yeah. Mm-hmm. Saia has historically been a robust generator of cash from its operations. Their core LTL business spits out good cash. In the trailing 12 months leading up to Q2 2025, they generated a strong $626.28 million in net cash from operating activities.
$600 million plus from operations. Sounds great.
It shows the underlying strength of their core mature business. However, and this is the big however, this robust operational cash flow was more than offset by a truly massive $739.18 million in net capital expenditures.
CapEx.
More CapEx than cash from operations.
Exactly. This resulted in a negative free cash flow of about negative $112.90 million over that period. So they're making good cash from their existing mature operations, but they're pouring even more cash plus some borrowed money into building out the new network to the point where they're actually burning cash on a net basis after investments.
Precisely. This clearly illustrates the highly capital-intensive nature of their current growth strategy. The financial statements tell a compelling story. It's a conscious, strategic decision to invest through the cycle, meaning they're doubling down on expansion, even during a period of relative economic softness.
Why do that? Why not wait?
Because management believes this is the best time to gain share and build the network, possibly getting assets cheaper and locking in share, while competitors might be hesitant. They are consciously sacrificing superior near-term profitability and free cash flow for what they firmly believe will be a much larger, more valuable, and ultimately more competitive network long-term.
It's the quintessential J-curve visual we keep mentioning, isn't it? You go down lower profits, negative cash flow before you hopefully come back up much stronger later. The current financial performance really reflects the bottom part of that J.
It truly is a perfect illustration. If you could visualize their financials on a chart, 2023 would show a highly profitable company with minimal debt and significant cash reserves. Then boom, 2024 and the first half of 2025 show capital expenditures exploding from $437 million in 2023 to over $1 billion in 2024.
Doubled CapEx, basically.
More than doubled. Cash balances have been depleted. Debt has been added to fund this massive investment. Revenue grew, yes, but expenses grew even faster, causing that operating ratio to worsen. The cash flow statement vividly confirms strong operating cash flow being almost entirely and then some reinvested into new assets.
This is a big question.
The central analytical question for you as an observer or potential investor is determining the potential slope and timing of that upward curve on the J. When will that huge investment start to pay off in significantly higher profitability and positive, growing free cash flow? That's the multi-billion dollar question.
That is the billion dollar question everyone's asking. So let's pivot now to Saia's specific growth opportunities and strategic initiatives. What exactly are they doing beyond just opening terminals to make that J-curve turn sharply upwards eventually?
Well, the cornerstone of their entire strategy, as we've highlighted repeatedly, is that network expansion. This is their absolute primary growth driver right now, and the pace has been truly aggressive.
How aggressive? Give us the numbers again.
Since 2017, they've opened 69 new terminals. But the real intense burst was in 2024 and 2025. Specifically, 21 new terminals opened in 2024 alone, and they plan for another 15 to 20 more openings during 2025.
That's an incredible pace of new facility openings, nearly one a week sometimes. What's the specific strategic objective behind this rapid build-out? How does it drive future profit?
By strategically placing these terminals closer to customers, Saia aims to significantly reduce what are called pickup and delivery costs, or P&D costs. These are the initial and final mile expenses, which are often the most costly part of an LTL shipment because they involve lots of stops with smaller trucks.
Okay, cut local costs. What else?
This proximity also shortens overall transit times between major points, allowing them to offer more reliable, faster service compared to competitors who might have to truck freight further to their nearest terminal. All of this is designed to attract new customers who value speed and reliability, and also capture a greater share of existing customers' freight from competitors who can't match the service levels.
And where are they expanding? Is it broad-based?
It's been geographically broad, yeah. Opening crucial new markets or densifying existing ones in key states like Michigan, California, Texas, New Jersey, and even up into Maine. They're strategically filling in the gaps on their national map.
And they're not just focused domestically, are they? I saw something about looking south towards Mexico.
No, they absolutely have cross-border ambitions too. In April 2024, they announced an exclusive cross-border partnership with a company called Fleex Mexico.
What's the goal there?
The strategic aim is clearly to capture a piece of the rapidly growing U.S.-Mexico trade market, which is benefiting significantly from nearshoring trends as companies move supply chains out of Asia. This indicates a very comprehensive approach to build out the U.S. network and then leverage it to tap into new, high-growth international corridors right next door.
Okay, makes sense. All this network expansion and strategic growth requires massive investment, as we saw in the cash flow. Can you put the scale of their capital additions and infrastructure investments into perspective again? How much are we really talking?
We are talking huge numbers. They've invested over $2 billion, that's billion with a B, in their business since 2021, with a record $1 billion in capital expenditures in 2024 alone. And for 2025, they're guiding for another $600 to $650 million. This sheer scale of investment clearly signals their unwavering commitment to this national expansion strategy. There's no turning back now.
And where exactly is all that money going? What are the big buckets of spending? Is it just terminals?
It's deployed across three main areas, primarily. A significant portion goes into real estate, that's acquiring land, building new terminals, or leasing strategic facilities. And that includes that big $235.7 million spent on the former Yellow properties.
Okay, property's big. What else?
Then there's revenue equipment, which means a constant upgrade and expansion of their fleet, modern tractors and trailers. This is needed to support the higher volumes they expect, but also aims for better fuel efficiency and enhanced driver comfort and safety, which helps with retention.
Trucks and trailers. That. And the third.
Finally, there's technology. Significant infrastructure improvements across all aspects of the business, from their core operating systems that manage the freight flow, to customer interfaces for booking and tracking, to the tech inside the trucks and on the docks.
On that note of technology, how are they leveraging tech and automation beyond just basic infrastructure improvements? Are they really thinking about the future of freight operations?
Yes, very much so, it seems. Saia is investing in sophisticated systems, specifically for optimizing their pricing strategies and meticulously managing their freight mix. We talked about that earlier. Using data to ensure they take on the most profitable business that best fits their network capacity and routing. Avoiding the bad freight, unprofitable or difficult to handle shipments that can really drag down margins.
So using data to be smarter about which customers and which freight to pursue.
Exactly. This aligns perfectly with broader industry trends where companies are using AI and automation for things like road optimization, predicting potential disruptions, and maximizing asset utilization, getting the absolute most out of every truck, every trailer, and every dock door every hour of the day.
And they're looking even further ahead with their fleet, with those electric truck tests.
Indeed. They're proactively partnering with industry leaders like Tesla and Daimler Trucks North America to test and potentially deploy electric semi-trucks in certain applications. Now, it's still very early days for heavy-duty electric vehicles and LTL.
Sure, range and charging are issues.
Big issues. But these pilots position Saia as a potential leader in sustainable freight down the road. It tells you they're thinking not just about immediate growth through expansion, but about long-term industry leadership, anticipating future shifts in transportation technology and environmental regulations. They want to be ready.
Finally, in this section on growth initiatives, it really sounds like management is fully bought into this aggressive strategy and exudes confidence in its execution, despite the current pain. What's their public vision?
They absolutely are. CEO Fritz Holzgreff's optimism is palpable in their public statements and calls. He's publicly stated things like, "We're in the early innings of tapping the potential of this business," implying there's much more growth to come.
And the CFO.
And CSO Matt Batta has highlighted concrete early successes, even amidst the margin pressure. He's noted that their newest markets, despite being that initial drag on overall profitability, are actually leading the way in volume and revenue growth rates.
So the new areas are growing fast, even if not profitable yet.
Right. It suggests the demand is there. They just need to reach scale and efficiency. This isn't just a fuzzy vision. It seems to be a unified belief across the senior leadership team that the current heavy investment in margin pressure will ultimately yield significant long-term returns as the expanded network matures and achieves its full density and operational efficiency. They're playing the long game.
A clear, ambitious strategy backed by significant capital deployment and confident leadership. Now, let's move to how they manage all that capital, particularly in light of this massive investment cycle. How have their capital expenditure patterns shifted? Is it all expansion?
Their capital allocation has shifted dramatically, yes. It's focused almost entirely on aggressive reinvestment for this national expansion. This is truly their number one, two, and three priority right now.
How dramatic was the shift?
Capital spending, as we noted, more than doubled from $437.2 million in 2023 to that record $1.04 billion in 2024. And for 2025, they're guiding for another $600 to $650 million. This surge in spending just clearly underscores that network expansion is their absolute top financial priority, far outweighing any other potential uses of capital like dividends or major share buybacks right now.
And to fund this, their balance sheet has undergone that pretty significant transformation we talked about, moving from very conservative to increasingly leveraged. Can you walk us through that shift in debt management again? How much debt are we talking?
Yeah, it's a big change. What was once described as a fortress-like balance sheet, at the end of 2023, they had a strong $296.2 million in cash on hand and minimal debt, only about $16.5 million.
Basically no net debt.
Right. That has fundamentally changed. By mid-2025, their cash reserves were drawn down significantly to $18.8 million, and total debt had increased to $309.1 million.
From $16 million to over $300 million in debt in about 18 months.
Exactly. This is a noticeable and very intentional shift in their financial structure, reflecting their commitment to funding this growth spurt, primarily through investment and borrowing, rather than, say, issuing a lot of new stock.
Where did this increased debt come from? What are the primary funding sources they've tapped into? Are they maxing out credit cards?
No, not quite. They've primarily utilized two main facilities. First, they increased the size of their revolving credit facility, like a corporate credit line, to $600 million. As of mid-2025, they had drawn about $207 million on that. So that provided immediate liquidity.
Okay, the revolver. What else?
And they also tapped the private placement market. They issued $100 million in senior promissory notes, basically IOUs sold to institutional investors under a larger $350 million private shelf agreement they have in place. So they're strategically utilizing various debt instruments to fund this ambitious growth, accessing capital markets that presumably recognize their long-term potential and are willing to lend to them.
But despite this significant increase in debt, do they still maintain adequate financial flexibility? And more importantly, are they compliant with their debt covenants, the rules set by lenders?
Yes. Based on the available information, they do. They still had about $356.6 million in available borrowing capacity under that revolving credit facility as of mid-2025, which provides a pretty significant buffer for future needs or unexpected bumps. And importantly, they reported remaining compliant with all their debt covenants.
What are the key covenants?
The main one usually relates to leverage, how much debt they have relative to their earnings. Their covenant requires their consolidated net lease adjusted leverage ratio to stay below 3.50 to 1.00. They were still well within that limit. So while definitely more leverage than before, they still appeared to have ample room to maneuver and continue investing within the agreed upon financial guardrails set by their lenders.
Okay, so the debt is up, but manageable for now. What about shareholder returns then? With all this money going into CapEx and managing debt, do they pay a dividend or buy back shares? Or is it truly all about reinvesting for growth right now?
It is truly all about growth. Saia does not currently pay a cash dividend on its common stock, nor do they have a significant share repurchase program in place at the moment.
So no cash back to shareholders directly?
No. This makes it abundantly clear that all available capital is being directed toward funding the company's organic growth initiatives, building out that network. For you, the investor, this means it's a pure play growth investment. Returns, if they come, are expected to come solely from capital appreciation, the stock price going up as the company expands its network and eventually significantly increases its profitability and earnings per share. It's definitely not a stock for investors seeking immediate income or cash returns.
A long-term capital appreciation play, pure and simple. And just to clarify on acquisitions, they're not out buying other entire trucking companies, are they? Their M&A is different.
No, their acquisition activity, as it were, is very specifically focused on real estate. strategic assets. The most significant transaction, as we discussed multiple times, was the purchase of those 17 and potentially up to 31 total. The deals were complex former Yellow Corporation terminals for that $235.7 million price tag.
So buying property, not companies.
Exactly. This approach allows them to rapidly accelerate their network build-out where they need it most, without the immense complexities, integration risks, and cultural challenges that come with acquiring an entire operating company with thousands of employees in different systems. It's a very targeted, strategic approach to inorganic growth, focusing purely on physical assets that immediately expand their reach and capacity.
Okay. And finally, for this section on capital management, how are they managing their working capital day to day? Do they have adequate liquidity for their payroll, fuel bills, etc.?
Yes. Saia appears to maintain sufficient liquidity for ongoing operations. Their working capital, the difference between current assets and current liabilities, actually increased to $148.3 million by mid-2025, up from $118.2 million in the prior year. This indicates they have adequate funds available to manage their day-to-day operations and short-term obligations smoothly, even while executing such a massive cash-consuming capital investment strategy.
It's impressive how they're balancing this massive investment push with maintaining financial prudence in other areas, but all this expansion is happening within a specific economic context. Let's talk about the recent challenges and industry headwinds they've had to navigate. First, the broader external headwinds like that freight recession and inflation. What has the economic environment been like for the trucking industry overall?
Yeah, it hasn't been smooth sailing for anyone. From roughly mid-2022 through early 2025, the North American trucking industry, and that includes LTL, experienced this prolonged freight recession.
What did that look like?
This period was really characterized by cooling consumer demand after the post-pandemic surge. There was a broad inventory destocking cycle across the economy. Companies basically had too much stuff ordered and needed to clear it out. And there was general softness in industrial activity as well. For LTL carriers like Saia, this translated directly into more hesitant shippers, softer freight volumes overall, and consequently, a more competitive pricing environment, even within the relatively disciplined LTL sector.
So they were pushing this incredibly aggressive growth strategy right into an economic slowdown.
That sounds counterintuitive.
It was definitely countercyclical. And inflation certainly didn't help their cost structure during this period either, did it?
No. Significant cost inflation hit carriers hard on multiple fronts. Volatile diesel fuel prices were a constant headache, even though they have fuel surcharges to help offset some of that. But more structurally, costs for labor wages and benefits, and also for new equipment like trucks and trailers, rose very sharply. And Saia felt this directly. Oh yeah, their salaries, wages, and benefits expense, for example, increased by 5.0% year over year in Q2 2025. Part of that was due to a 4.1% general wage increase they implemented back in July 2024, specifically to remain competitive in a very tight labor market.
And the labor market is still a chronic challenge for the entire trucking industry, isn't it? Finding drivers.
Absolutely. The industry continues to grapple with this chronic shortage of qualified drivers and technicians to maintain the trucks. This persistent shortage puts constant upward pressure on wages and benefits as companies fiercely compete for limited talent. Saia's proactive wage increases are a direct response to this competitive labor environment. It's basically a necessary cost of doing business if you want to attract and retain the skilled workforce needed to staff their expanding network and maintain those crucial service levels. You can't run trucks without drivers.
Very true. So external headwinds like recession and inflation are one thing, and every company faces them to some degree. But Saia also had to navigate what we're calling self-imposed operational challenges, essentially, the direct cost and complexity of executing their own growth strategy. This sounds like it might have been their most significant recent challenge.
It truly has been, arguably more impactful than the external factors recently. While navigating those headwinds, Saia's most significant recent challenge has been largely self-imposed. Simply managing the inherent operational and financial drag from its incredibly rapid network expansion.
What does that drag look like day to day?
Well, opening a new terminal involves significant upfront costs, real estate, equipment, initial staffing, while the revenue stream builds only slowly as you establish routes and build freight density in that new market. This dynamic, multiplied across dozens of new terminals opening in quick succession, was the primary driver of their margin compression and that J-curve effect we keep seeing in their financials.
And we have a very concrete number for that drag, don't we? The sources indicate that those new terminals, the ones open for less than 3 years, were operating collectively at a high mid-90s operating ratio in Q2 2025.
That's right, a high mid-90s OR. That means they're basically running at close to break even or maybe even a slight loss on an operating basis. That's a huge drag on overall company profitability when your mature terminals might be running in the low 80s or even better, and the company average is pushed up to nearly 88.
So those new sites are pulling the average way down. Is it getting better?
It is improving, apparently. That high mid-90s OR in Q2 was actually noted as an improvement from being basically at break-even, maybe 100 OR in Q1. So they are making progress. But these new facilities are consciously operating at lower efficiency initially because they are simply underutilized as they ramp up. They haven't hit scale yet.
Is management addressing this?
Yes. Management has been actively working to align costs with volumes more tightly, particularly as the freight environment softened. That included a targeted 4.2% headcount reduction between March and June 2025, likely trimming some fat or adjusting staffing levels in locations where volume ramped slower than expected. This shows they are acutely aware of the cost side of the equation and are trying to manage the bottom of that J-curve carefully.
This all makes Saia's strategy truly a contrarian one, doesn't it? Expanding so aggressively right into a downturn.
He was incredibly bold, yeah. While many competitors, maybe even ODFL to some extent, pulled back on capital spending and focused purely on cost control during the freight recession, Saia did the exact opposite. They floored the accelerator on investment.
Why? What was the strategic view?
Management clearly saw the unique combination of the freight recession, which maybe made real estate and equipment potentially cheaper or easier to acquire, and Yellow's sudden collapse as the ideal, almost unprecedented time to aggressively invest and expand. A window of opportunity they might never see again.
So what was the inherent trade-off in taking such a contrarian approach? What did they gain and what did they sacrifice?
Well, the gain was clear. This strategy allowed Saia to continue growing revenue and tonnage significantly when most other carriers were experiencing declines or stagnant volumes. They took share. However, this growth came at the explicit and accepted cost of near-term profitability and cash flow. It's a trade-off that is absolutely central to their entire investment case. Sacrifice profits and cash flow today for what they hope will be a much stronger, larger, more defensible, and ultimately more profitable long-term strategic position in the industry.
That's a huge strategic gamble, placing a massive bet on future success, but one that could pay off handsomely if they execute it well over the next few years.
If they execute, yes. Execution is everything here.
Let's shift focus now to the people steering this ship, management quality and corporate governance. Who is leading Saia through this transformation, and how transparent are they being?
Saia is led by an experienced executive team that seems to have a very clear, long-term strategic vision. The key leaders are President and CEO Frederick J. Holzgriff III and EVP and CFO Matt Beta.
And how have they communicated this bold and potentially risky strategy?
Their public commentary, particularly on earnings calls and investor presentations, has been remarkably consistent and, I'd say, quite transparent, especially regarding the rationale for the aggressive expansion and acknowledging the associated near-term margin pressure. They haven't hidden from it.
They've been upfront about the J-curve.
Yes. They've even provided specific data points comparing the performance of their new versus mature terminals, which is a level of detail and transparency you don't always see. It helps investors understand the dynamics at play.
That transparency is crucial for investors trying to get comfortable with this complex strategy. And their execution capability, just based on results so far, seems strong. Pulling off the Yellow terminal acquisitions and opening dozens of new sites rapidly.
Absolutely. The successful acquisition and relatively smooth integration, it seems, of those Yellow assets, combined with the rapid pace of new terminal openings and managing the staffing challenges, demonstrate strong operational and strategic decision-making capabilities. They've shown they can effectively plan and execute on a very large scale, complex projects.
Okay, competent leadership. What about their corporate governance practices? Is the board structured well? Are there checks and balances in place?
Yes. Saia appears to have established a robust corporate governance framework that aligns well with current best practices. For instance, they follow the recommended practice of separating the roles of chairman of the board and CEO. They have an independent chairman, Richard D. O'Dell, and also a lead independent director, Randolph W. Melville.
And the board independence?
A substantial majority, 8 out of their 10 directors, are independent, which ensures strong oversight and accountability for management.
Are there any specific board policies that stand out as particularly strong or shareholder-friendly?
Yes. Their corporate governance guidelines include a few noteworthy points. They have a mandatory retirement age of 72 for directors, which helps ensure board refreshment over time. They also have a policy prohibiting directors from serving on more than three other public company boards, ensuring they have sufficient time to dedicate to Saia's business.
What about ethics and accountability?
They emphasize ethics strongly. All employees are required to acknowledge a code of business conduct and ethics annually. They also have a clawback policy in place for executive incentive compensation. This means the company can recover bonuses or incentive pay if financial results are later restated due to errors or misconduct, or if improper conduct is discovered.
That's good. Anything else?
Yes. And importantly, they have a strict policy prohibiting directors and executives from hedging or pledging their Saia stock. This ensures their personal financial interests remain directly aligned with the long-term performance of the company's shares, alongside regular shareholders. They can't easily bet against the stock or borrow against it.
That's very good to see. It really aligns interests. And speaking of shareholder alignment, how is executive compensation structured? Is it designed to ensure their interests are tied to the company's long-term performance and the success of the strategy?
It appears to be. That's their stated shareholder alignment policy. Executive compensation is heavily weighted towards performance-based and long-term incentives. Things like performance stock units, PSUs, that only vest if certain targets are met, and restricted stock grants that vest over time.
So less cash, more stock tied to performance.
Exactly. This directly ties a significant portion of their personal wealth accumulation to the company's stock performance and the achievement of key long-term strategic goals, like improving that operating ratio eventually. They also have robust stock ownership guidelines in place.
What are those?
Executives are required to own Saia stock valued at anywhere from 2 to 5 times their base salary, depending on their level. And non-employee directors must own stock worth 5 times their annual cash retainer. This ensures meaningful skin in the game for all the key decision makers. They have a vested interest in the long-term success.
And shareholders seem to approve of this setup.
It appears so. The sources mentioned strong shareholder support, evidenced by an overwhelming 96.7% approval vote for the advisory say-on-pay proposal back in 2018, the most recent mentioned. That indicates broad shareholder confidence in their compensation practices and the overall governance framework. It suggests investors feel management's incentives are reasonably aligned with their own long-term interests.
Okay. Strong leadership, good governance, aligned incentives. That's reassuring. Now for the moment of truth for many of our listeners. How is the market actually valuing Saia right now, given everything we've discussed? Let's look at their current valuation metrics as of mid-2025. What are the key multiples?
All right, let's look at the numbers. Saia's current price-to-earnings, P.E. ratio, is hovering around 27-28x on a trailing 12-month basis, and the forward P.E. based on estimates is pretty similar.
Okay, 28 times earnings. What else?
Their enterprise value to EBITDA ratio, is running around 12-13x. Their price-to-sales, P.S. ratio, is about 2.5x, and their price-to-book, P.B. ratio, is roughly 3.3-3.5x.
How does that P.E. of 27-28x compare historically for Saia itself? Is this valuation high, low, or somewhere in the middle relative to its own past trading range?
That's a good question. Saia's current P.E. of around 27-28x is actually right in the middle of its 5-year historical range. That range has fluctuated pretty significantly from as low as 15x to as high as 42x.
So it's not at an extreme peak or trough right now based on its history?
Exactly. Relative to its own past, it's neither excessively cheap nor prohibitively expensive. It suggests the market isn't at an extreme level of optimism or pessimism regarding Saia's individual trajectory right now. It implies a degree of historical normalcy in valuation, despite the dramatic strategic shifts happening underneath.
But the real insight, as we discussed earlier, comes from the peer comparison. This is where we truly see the market's apparent vote of confidence in Saia's bold strategy, right?
Exactly. That's where the story gets clearer. Saia trades at a significant valuation premium to several of its competitors, like TFI International, which is around 20x PE, and ArcBest, only around 11x PE. Hmm. Saia beats them on almost every multiple.
Why the premium over those guys?
It clearly indicates that the market is explicitly expecting Saia's growth prospects and, importantly, its future profitability potential to be superior to these peers, likely driven by this aggressive expansion and market share gain strategy.
But then it gets really interesting, almost paradoxical, when you compare it to Old Dominion, the gold standard leader. Remind us of that comparison.
Right. Saia's PE of 28x is approaching the premium multiple of the industry leader Old Dominion, which trades around 31x. This is particularly striking because As we've discussed extensively, ODFL's current profitability and returns are substantially higher and far more consistent.
So the market is valuing Saia almost like ODFL, even though its current profits are much lower?
It suggests the market is essentially valuing Saia as if it will eventually close this profitability gap and achieve similar levels of operational excellence as its expanded network matures. It's clearly a forward-looking valuation, heavily discounting the current lower margins in favor of future potential earnings power.
And again, just to reiterate that nuance with EBITDA, Saia's 13x is similar to XPO, but still lower than ODFL's 20x. What does that particular difference tell us again?
It indicates that when you factor in the debt which Saia has taken on significantly more of recently to fund its expansion, there's still a noticeable valuation gap with ODFL on an enterprise basis. This reflects ODFL's superior operational efficiency, stronger current earnings power, and cleaner balance sheet being valued more highly when debt is considered.
And Old Dominion's exceptionally high price-to-sales ratio of 6.2x compared to Saia's 2.5x just hammers home the point about ODFL's profitability premium.
It really does. It directly reflects ODFL's best-in-class margins. The market simply pays a much, much higher premium for every dollar of ODFL's revenue because it knows so much of that revenue reliably drops straight to the bottom line as profit. Saia isn't there yet.
So, in summary, when we look at Saia's valuation relative to its current growth and its current financial returns like ROE around 12.7% and ROAC around 9.4%, the valuation, particularly the PE near 28x, does appear stretched compared to its current financial metrics.
That disconnect confirms it. The stock's current valuation is clearly not based on its current earnings power. It isn't reflecting today's profits. Instead, it is purely a forward-looking assessment of its potential.
A bet on the future.
Entirely. The investment thesis is predicated entirely on the belief that Saia's aggressive growth strategy will successfully translate into higher market share, significantly improved network density leading to better efficiency, and ultimately a substantial expansion of its profit margins and returns on capital over the next several years. The current valuation is quite literally a vote of confidence from the market that this ambitious outcome will indeed be achieved.
That's a very clear signal from the market, placing a lot of faith in management's execution. But a bold strategy inherently comes with bold risks. Let's move to a critical area for any potential investment, risk assessment, what we're calling the challenges of a bold strategy. What's the paramount business and operational risk here for Saia? The number one thing that could go wrong.
The most significant risk by far is execution risk. It just looms over everything else. The success of this entire multi-billion dollar strategy hinges entirely on the effective integration and profitable ramp-up of those dozens of new terminals acquired and opened so rapidly in 2024 and 2025.
What does failure look like here?
Failure could look like several things. If they fail to efficiently manage costs within these new facilities as they scale up, if they struggle to hire and train adequate staff quickly enough in all these new locations, or crucially, if they simply can't build freight density, fill those new terminals with profitable freight as quickly or as profitably as their plan assumes.
Then what happens?
Then it could lead to a prolonged period of margin depression, much longer than expected. They could get stuck with high costs and underutilized assets.
And the tangible manifestation of that risk right now is those new facilities operating at that high mid-90s operating ratio. They're barely breaking even or maybe losing a bit of money. That's the execution challenge in real time.
Exactly. If that metric doesn't improve steadily and significantly over the next, say, 12 to 24 months, if they don't achieve the density and efficiency improvements they expect on schedule, then the company may simply fail to achieve an adequate return on its massive capital investment. They could be left with a permanently higher cost structure than anticipated.
Okay. Execution risk is number one. What other business risks are significant? Labor.
Beyond execution, labor risk is always present and significant in the trucking industry. There's that persistent industry-wide shortage of qualified drivers and technicians we talked about. This means ongoing wage inflation pressures, higher recruitment and training costs, and potential service disruptions if they can't staff their trucks and terminals adequately, especially with the network expanding so fast.
They are non-union though, right? Does that help?
Yes, Saia is non-unionized, which generally provides more operational flexibility than some unionized competitors like ABF Freight. However, long-term labor disputes or potential organizing efforts are always a background consideration for any large trucking company.
Okay, that makes sense. What about the financial risks, specifically given their shift from that fortress-like balance sheet to one with significantly more debt now?
Yes, the balance sheet profile has changed. They've shifted from very conservative to increase leverage, with over $300 million in total debt now. While they're currently meeting their covenants comfortably, a severe or unexpectedly prolonged economic downturn could definitely strain their financial flexibility. It could make it harder to service that increased debt load if earnings were to drop significantly.
And interest rates.
And related to that is interest rate risk. The increased debt, much of which under the revolving credit facility is likely variable rate, exposes Saia to fluctuations in interest rates. Sustained higher interest rates, if they persist, would directly increase their interest expense, thereby reducing their net income and impacting the bottom line profitability. It makes them more sensitive to Fed policy now.
So a deeper or longer recession or sticky high interest rates could hit them harder now than they would have been hit just 2 years ago.
Absolutely. More leverage amplifies both the upside and the downside.
That ties into the inherent cyclicality and economic sensitivity of the LTL industry overall.
Right. The LTL industry is inherently cyclical. Its performance is closely tied to the broader economic cycle, manufacturing output, consumer spending, construction activity. A deeper than expected economic slowdown or a prolonged recession would be a major headwind for Saia, particularly right now during this vulnerable expansion phase.
Why particularly bad now?
It would make it much, much harder for them to grow volumes and critically build that necessary freight density in their new, still inefficient network. This could delay or even derail the expected profitability improvements. And the potential nightmare scenario investors watch out for is being left with a high-cost, underutilized network and a newly leveraged balance sheet in a weak demand environment. That's the big cyclical risk.
Not a good combination. And what about competitive risks? They're up against the Gold Standard and Old Dominion and other very strong players who aren't just going to roll over.
That's a constant pressure, absolutely. Saia faces intense competition from highly efficient, well-capitalized operators like Old Dominion, which, as we keep saying, sets a very high bar for service and profitability. This persistent competition could limit Saia's ability to consistently raise prices as much as they want or expand margins as quickly as planned, even with an improved network. ODFL and others will fight hard to keep their share.
Any long-term disruptive threats?
Well, maybe not an immediate threat to the core asset-based LTL business model itself, but the long-term entry of technologically advanced, extremely deep-pocketed players like Amazon into the broader LTL brokerage space, or potentially even building out some of their own middle-mile LTL capabilities, is a trend that certainly warrants continuous monitoring for any potential future disruption to the established players.
Good point. Finally, what are the key regulatory risks that could impact Saia's operations or costs?
Like all transportation providers, especially trucking companies, Saia is subject to extensive and ever-changing federal and state regulations. These cover everything from safety standards, driver hours of service limits, vehicle emission standards, hazardous materials transport, and more. Changes to these regulations, like stricter emissions rules requiring new, more expensive trucks, can and often do increase operating costs and capital expenditure requirements for the entire industry.
And that NMFTA classification change.
Yes, and specifically that upcoming NMFTA freight classification overhaul we discussed, set for mid-2025, presents a significant near-term operational and pricing risk. Failure to effectively adapt their systems, train their staff, and adjust their pricing models to these new density-based rules could potentially lead to revenue leakage, costly customer disputes over invoices, or even non-compliance issues if not handled meticulously from day one. It's a big operational lift.
Well, that's a comprehensive look at the challenges and the potential potholes on Saia's ambitious growth path. It's definitely not a guaranteed success.
It is not. And it really underscores that while the opportunity created by Yellow's exit is compelling and Saia's management is executing boldly towards it, the path forward is absolutely not without significant hurdles and inherent risk that need to be carefully monitored by anyone following the company.
So let's bring it all together for you, our listener. Saia Inc. truly presents a distinct and compelling investment case, but it is fundamentally a high-risk, high-reward proposition. No way around that. This is a company in the midst of a massive transformative growth strategy, leveraging a unique, almost once-in-a-generation opportunity stemming from a giant competitor's sudden failure.
And the outcome of this investment, the success or failure of this transformation, is almost entirely dependent on management's ability to execute this ambitious plan over the coming 18 to 24 months, maybe longer. This isn't a passive investment where you just ride the market. It's a direct bet on operational prowess and the strategic vision and the follow-through of their leadership team.
So what does the bull case look like? If Saia pulls this off as planned, what's the upside?
If Saia successfully integrates its vastly expanded terminal network, gets the freight density up, controls costs, and improves efficiency, they will have created a more valuable and defensible long-term asset in the LTL space, a true national competitor at scale. A larger, denser network means superior service potential, faster transit times, greater operational efficiency through scale, continued market share gains, and significant operating leverage as those many new facilities mature and fill up with profitable freight.
And the financial payoff.
In that scenario, the current margin compression and the negative free cash flow we're seeing now will be looked back upon in hindsight as simply a short-term investment, a necessary dip in the J-curve that led to a substantial re-rating of the company's long-term earnings power and presumably its overall stock valuation.
Makes sense. And the bear case. What happens if execution falters or if external factors like a deep recession significantly impede their progress?
Conversely, the execution risk is substantial, as we've stressed. If management stumbles maybe in controlling costs within these new facilities, maybe they can't hire fast enough, maybe service suffers during the integration, or if a severe economic downturn prevents them from building the necessary freight density and utilization in that bigger network.
Then what?
Then Saia could be left holding the bag, stuck with a bloated, high-cost network and a newly leveraged balance sheet in a weak market. This would inevitably lead to prolonged, depressed profitability, much lower returns on that huge investment, and likely a significant derating of the stock as the market loses confidence in the strategy and its payoff.
A costly failed gamble. Ultimately, as we've discussed throughout this deep dive, an investment in Saia today is truly a bet on execution. The market opportunity, particularly post-Yellow, is ample and clear. But operational prowess and disciplined management of costs during this critical growth phase will be the ultimate differentiator between success and failure. For you, our listener, whether you're interested in the stock as a potential investment or simply curious about the logistics industry that underpins our entire economy, The most critical single metric to monitor over the next few quarters, maybe years, will be the quarterly progression of the company's operating ratio.
Absolutely. A consistent sequential improvement in this key metric, meaning that 87.8% ROR starts gradually coming down quarter after quarter, heading back towards the low 80s or better. That will be the first and most important tangible signal that this bold strategic gamble is beginning to pay off, that the J-curve is indeed turning upwards as planned.
It's fascinating to watch unfold.
It really is. It's fascinating to consider what it truly takes for a company to make a bet like this, to invest through the cycle so aggressively, consciously sacrificing today's profits for a potentially much bigger tomorrow, and maybe even ponder what that kind of competitive dynamic ultimately means for the broader economy and eventually the prices you pay for all the goods delivered right to your door.
Indeed. What an incredibly dynamic and high-stakes industry and company to dive into. That's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.